right? Huh? Is he the greatest? Brady, you're lucky to have Brady. He's my friend, but you're lucky to.
Wow. They really like me. They really like me. It only took me 14 years here to win them over, but New Hampshire really, finally... Oh, he means that other Brady, doesn't he? Ah, well. From New Hampshire Public Radio, it's Primarily Politics. I'm Brady Carlson, and I am lucky to have you. Coming up, the polls are in, and we don't know what the heck they're telling us. Plus, New Hampshire's largest city is strutting its presidential stuff. And forget undecided voters, sometimes the decided ones are hardest to read. But first, let's get caught up on the latest primary news. Time for this week's three words. Word number one, rivalry. The Democratic candidates are pulling out all the stops in this state. Hillary Clinton is back, and she's also been sending some big names to the state on her behalf. Names like Clinton.
I know we're in a hard fight here, and I know we're running against one of your neighbors.
That's former President Bill Clinton speaking this week in Concord. That neighbor he mentioned, also known as Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, was in the state himself this week. And he was buoyed by his surrogates, too, like environmental activist Bill McKibben and rapper Killer Mike. In the GOP field, the big rivalry right now is between Donald Trump and Ted Cruz. They were both in New Hampshire. Cruz told NPR Sarah McCammon Americans want a president a little more steady than the Donald.
They want someone they know and trust. They don't want to wake up every day wondering if the latest polls might set off the commander-in-chief into a frenzy of tweets.
Trump, for his part, said those polls are what proves how steady he is.
Every one of my competitors say, I shouldn't mention the polls. But that's because I'm in first place. From the day we started, virtually, we've been in first place.
And what of the other Republicans here this week? Well, they're hoping for word number two, resurgence. Here's how political scientist Chris Galdieri explained it to NHPR's Rick Ganley.
Jeb Bush, Chris Christie, John Kasich, Marco Rubio. These are four candidates who are all appealing to the same pool of voters here in New Hampshire. They're all candidates who you'd expect to do well here. However, there are four of them. So the pressure is on each of these four to try to be the one remaining candidate from that four standing.
Which brings us to word number three, representatives, as in New Hampshire's House of Representatives. Speaker Sean Jasper has invited the candidates to address the House for 15 minutes, and this week three more Republican candidates took the speaker up on his offer. They talked about the state's substance abuse crisis, they made lots of references to New Hampshire's motto, Live Free or Die. Reporter Paige Sutherland says the speeches were well received, mostly.
Most of the boos came from Democratic members. When Chris Christie spoke about how great it felt to speak in front of a Republican-controlled House, something he doesn't have in his home state of New Jersey.
The 2016 candidates are out in force again this weekend and into next week. You can find a full event calendar at our website, nhpr.org, or in our new iPhone app called State of Democracy. Now, those of us who cover candidates get email updates about candidate events, official statements, and, yes, the latest poll numbers. Well, just this week, I got an email from the political editors at NPR in Washington with some warnings about polls. They said, in short, there are a lot of polls that come out this close to the primary, and they vary, and the results can be very volatile, and doing polls is getting harder, and some poll likely voters instead of registered voters. And so the best thing to do with all these new polls is take a deep breath and be patient, which I cannot do. So instead, I called a poll expert to see what he has to say. He's Steve Cazella, president of the Mass Inc. Polling Group, and he's keeping an eye on the polls for us this season. Good to talk with you, Steve.
Thank you. Good to be here.
We're getting to the point where candidates who are leading in the polls say, look at the polls, I'm doing great. And the candidates who aren't leading are saying, you know, the only poll that matters is on election day. What might I, a man who just wants to know who's going to win the primary a full month before it happens, do with this information?
Yeah, that's a good question. And it's hard to say exactly, and it's hard to say exactly for a few reasons. One is that the polls this year seem to contradict the other factors that you could typically use to predict who's going to win. So 538 just put out two different models. You could choose
538, the famous Nate Silver.
Right, right. Who's, you know, predicted both the 2008 and the 2012 elections quite accurately. And what it allows you to do is choose whether or not you think endorsements matter and polls or just polls. If you choose just polls, it looks very different than if you put an endorsement. So basically what that means is that do you believe that party actors, do you believe that the party establishment, who they want, do you believe that that's a good indicator, which it has been in the past? or do you believe the polls? You know, because they're saying very different things. Donald Trump and Ted Cruz have gotten basically no endorsements from the party establishment, but they're leading in a lot of polls. So the thing that's different is that it's showing that voters are acting in a way that may not be predicted by the same things that would have been effective to predict it in the past.
And the funny thing is, in a way, if this were perhaps any other set of candidates, you might be able to look at just purely the poll data and say, well, one candidate has been ahead for months and months and months. Everybody else is sort of in this weird configuration below that one candidate. This should be very simple to say what the polls mean, and yet it doesn't seem to say that.
Right, and that candidate's been Donald Trump, and he's been saying for months, I'm way ahead in the polls. He's calling himself a poll maven now, I think, a poll expert. You're absolutely right. Typically, when you would see somebody with this large of a lead in this many states for this long, you'd have to think that the candidate would be the prohibitive favorite. When you put in other factors, the probabilities change.
Rand Paul decided to forego the lower tier debate, but he said the polls at that level can't say for much certainty that I'm any lower or any higher than Jeb Bush or John Kasich or Carly Fiorina or Ben Carson or Chris Christie. So why are they putting me in the second tier, and why are they not putting me in the top tier?
Right. I mean, just in the last little while, there's been another poll that's come out, just to show you sort of how sensitive these things are, that if it were included, may actually put him back on the big stage. So that shows you how, you know, sort of the hair splitting that goes on when you're trying to figure out, you know, does this person average out to 5.01 or 4.99, if five is the cutoff. You know, it's not my favorite use of polls, to be honest, for that exact reason. You know, polls aren't laser surgery. You don't know things within a hundredth of a decimal point. You know, when you try to use them to figure out where someone should be, which stage they should be on, if they should be on any stage, sometimes the difference is three respondents in overall five or six or 10 of the polls. You know, if three respondents had changed their mind, it would change where the candidate appeared.
And a big bone of contention for some people in New Hampshire has been the use of national polls and
that
the debate criteria versus New Hampshire polls or Iowa polls.
Right. And that seems to have changed in recent polls. You know, CNN started it and others have followed suit. What I would say about the polling outside of Iowa and New Hampshire is you really have to wait until the two of them are over. Even in New Hampshire, you should really wait and see what New Hampshire voters decide to take from Iowa, because there's lots of history, as you well know, of New Hampshire voters changing their mind after they see what happened in Iowa. But for later states, you know, who's even still in the game, you know, after Iowa and New Hampshire will make a big difference.
So watch the polls, keep an eye on them, but don't be surprised if they change.
Right. Keep, especially on the later state polls, you know, you can look there to see who's doing very well, but don't be at all surprised if, other than Donald Trump and maybe other than Ted Cruz, the other candidates' level of support changes quite a bit after Iowa and New Hampshire.
Well, Steve, thanks so much for setting me straight.
Glad to do it.
That's Steve Cazella of the Mass Inc. Group. Coming up, the road to the White House rides through the Manchester Mill Yard. It's Primarily Politics from New Hampshire Public Radio.
If you are interested in this podcast, you would probably love our new iPhone app. It is all about politics. It is called State of Democracy. You can use it to get an exclusive daily update on the New Hampshire primary race. You can use it to look at photos of the candidates, find out where they're going to be with interactive maps, and so much more. Go to the iTunes store right now and search for State of Democracy and download it today.
I'm Brady Carlson. Welcome back. New Hampshire has 221 towns, 25 unincorporated areas, and 13 cities. And for presidential candidates, they are not created equal. As awesome as it would be to have the next leader of the free world spending part of his or her winter in a place like Second College Grant or Hadley's Purchase, candidates go where the voters are. And the largest number of potential voters in this state are to be found in the largest city, Manchester.
Everybody gravitates back to Manchester. It's the population density, it's the media concentration, it's the airport, it's the hotels. Ultimately, this is where the rubber meets the road.
Over the years, all those visits and all that attention have built up a rich political history. And a new exhibit at Manchester's Mill Yard Museum looks through it all, from John F. Kennedy's visit to Victory Park on the eve of election 1960, to walks with the mayor on Elm Street, to selfies at the diner. It's called Manchester, the Primary and the Presidency, and I got a tour this week from John Clayton, executive director of the Manchester Historic Association and the Mill Yard Museum. Given the way that things have been shaping up in presidential elections as of late, I'm guessing that somewhere between 2/3 and 3/4 of the people listening to this podcast are going to be running for president in the next 4 to 8 years. What are some of the other places that people who are going to be campaigning in Manchester, the sort of must stops?
Yeah. Well, I'm a West Side boy. I'm from the West Side of Manchester, and Chez Vachon is the ultimate West Side watering hole. Bill Clinton fell in love with Chez Vachon. Their particular dish is a Canadian specialty called poutine, French fries with gravy and curd cheese, and it's a heart attack on a plate. And in his campaigning days back in 92, he absolutely fell in love with it. The Red Arrow Diner is a quintessential stop. Donald Trump made a visit last week and didn't turn out so well for him. Food was good. Company was not so welcoming as he might have expected. And it's open 24 hours a day, so the candidates can slip in whenever they want. But again, it's a great opportunity to meet real people in Manchester.
There's a very funny juxtaposition going on in a picture here of Mitt Romney at the Puritan back room. He's all smiles. The woman sitting next to him with a cup of coffee, it looks like, is not all smiles.
We don't know if she's blowing on her coffee to cool it off, if that's an exhalation of exasperation, but Mitt Romney's doing his job. He's pressing the flesh. We're going to have a caption contest for this photo and let our viewers and members decide what they should say under that picture.
I just want to draw attention to a picture here. George W. Bush is holding a pancake flipper. He is standing in front of a giant yellow and blue sign that says Bisquick.
And I know this intimately because I was the master of ceremonies for this event at the Radisson Hotel. Bisquick put on a senior's breakfast. 400 seniors got free meals. The 8 candidates in that season got to speak for 5 minutes each to the group, the culmination being a collective pancake flipping. So George W. Bush, live on C-SPAN, you can see his pancake is about to go the wrong way. The funniest thing you don't see here is that Gary Bauer, a candidate at that time, made the fatal mistake of looking up at his pancake and went backwards right through the screens and off the stage and fell on his hindquarters in the back of the stage on live national television.
If I remember right, the quote was, ah! Here's some campaign buttons. Well, Ken Rudin would be. He would never leave if you let him in this room.
Manchester has an extraordinary button collector named Rick Samara. He's a retired civics and history teacher, a Manchester native who would go to all the different campaign offices and ask for buttons, and he would use them to decorate his classroom at Memorial High School. It was a way to get his civics and history students engaged in the process. Chelsea Clinton was in the museum a few days ago, and she was enthralled by this. She said her father would love this as a big button collector himself.
Although he probably wouldn't have collected quite so many Perot for President buttons as we see here.
Nor the David Dukes. I think there are quite a few that he probably, Lyndon LaRouche would not have been on his hit list either. But
presidential visits to Manchester. So this is not just people who ran for president, but actual presidents.
We think Manchester touches them in that way. So it's not uncommon for sitting presidents to come back and visit us. You have a great shot of Gerald Ford outside Parizeau's department store on Elm Street, Ronald Reagan at Manchester Airport, Harry Truman getting a key to the city from Manchester Mayor Joseph Atte Benoit in 1952. So yeah, I think they develop an affection and a fondness for this place that brings them back.
There's so much talk today about how the primary changes, whether the primary is still as valuable or relevant as it used to be.
You know, people say that it is not what it was before, Brady, that we're losing some of that intimacy. And when you look at these photos of the current candidates campaigning in Manchester, that gives lie to that notion. These people are out there in people's homes, in restaurants, in office space, talking about their issues and talking to candidates. We say that history is happening in Manchester every day. These are voters who are getting to meet the candidates. They take the selfie, they take the image with the candidate, and they make it a part of our exhibit.
That's John Clayton of the Manchester Historic Association and Milliard Museum. The exhibit Manchester, the Primary and the Presidency is on display through February 20th. You'll find more about it at nhpr.org. Voters in Manchester, like those in all of New Hampshire, are known to make up their minds late in the primary process. Some are already on record as supporting one candidate or another, but even in those cases, things aren't quite cut and dried. That's what reporter Brian Walston found when he started calling some of these seemingly committed voters.
Donald Trump is running a very unconventional campaign in a lot of ways, and I think that's been pretty well documented. So he releases this list of town chairs in December, and so, you know, I wanted to find out what being a Trump town chair entails. I mean, did it involve any of this standard campaign volunteer work and, you know, knocking on doors and things like that? a guy from New York who came to the state a few years ago as part of the Free State Project. And he's a libertarian. And when I mentioned that he was a Trump town chair, he said, well, I'll be voting for Rand Paul. And he said it was important that he vote for Rand Paul because it was
very important that the libertarian voice be expressed in terms of numbers to the platform for the Republican Party at the convention.
But he said he expects Paul at some point to drop out of the race because he's low in the poll, he's not going to win. And at that point, he will become a Trump supporter. And he believes Trump is more libertarian than he lets on. That said, he also suggested that he may do what he did in 2012, which is vote for Gary Johnson.
That's reporter Brian Walston, our precinct captain for Truth and Knowledge. And the truth is, that's all for this edition of the show. We'll be with you every week until the New Hampshire primary, which is not that many weeks from now. So now is a good time to tell us what you think of the show. Send us a comment on nhpr.org or through New Hampshire Public Radio's Facebook page. You can find me on Twitter at Brady Carlson, all one word. I'd love to hear your ideas and your questions. We had help this week from Sarah Ashworth, RJ Perkins, Dan Barrick, and Rebecca Lavoie. Thanks to each of them, and thanks to you for listening. I'm Brady Carlson. We'll see you next week.
If you love politics, if you love the New Hampshire primary, if you love getting that behind-the-scenes view of what is going on here on the trail in New Hampshire, you would love our new app. It's called State of Democracy. It's available for iPhone and iPad. You can check it out right now by going to the iTunes Store and searching for State of Democracy, NHPR. Both of those searches will bring up the State of Democracy app, and then you can download it. Put the primary right in your pocket.